Also this afternoon, teacher unions back government's decision to recruit about 16,000 trained teachers, but demands more as they say the current numbers are inadequate to clear the backlog of unemployed trained teachers.
The president has heard us loud and clear that we need to increase the numbers. But of course, it falls below our expectation.
And much later, South Africa is sending envoys to Ghana to address concerns over xenophobic attacks against Ghanaian migrants. President Cyril Ramaphosa says both countries must work together to find solutions.
Work with us, and I'm rather pleased that President Mahama of Ghana has been saying he would like to make a call on other African countries to work with South Africa. It's precisely what has triggered our intention to send envoys.
These and more with me, Mamisi Nyamiche Thompson. This is Joy News, independent, fearless, credible. Do stay with us. And details now. President John Mahama has nominated three persons to the Supreme Court, paving the way for an expansion of Ghana's apex court if Parliament approves. The nominees are private legal practitioner Tony Forson, Court of Appeal Justice Sophia Rosetta Benasco Issa, and Justice Edward Amwakwa Santi. The nominations announced Tuesday were made in consultation with the Judicial Council and in accordance with Article 144 of the 1992 Constitution. Parliament's Appointment Committee is expected to vet the nominees in the coming weeks. We profile the three nominees in the following report.
Justice Sophia Rosetta Benasco Issa was a justice of the High Court before her elevation to the Court of Appeal. She has authored and participated in numerous appellate decisions covering civil, commercial, constitutional, and land matters. During her parliamentary vetting as Supreme Court nominee, Justice Sophia Issa advocated for greater digitization of Ghana's judicial system to improve efficiency and reduce delays, expanding access to legal education to meet the needs of Ghana's growing democracy, and strict adherence to the judicial oath and constitutional principles. Justice Edward Amwakwa Santi is an international judge and legal scholar. He once served as president and judge of the ECOWAS Court of Justice. Upon his return to Ghana, he was a justice at the Court of Appeal. In 2025, Justice Amwakwa Santi was elected to the Advisory Committee of the United Nations Human Rights Council, becoming one of the few Ghanaian judges to hold such a prestigious international position. Some other associations he has includes the Commonwealth Magistrates and Judges Association and the World Jurist Association. Tony Forson, the only nominee from private legal practice, has more than three decades of experience in advocacy, constitutional law, family law, and commercial litigation. He headed the Ghana Bar Association from 2018 to 2021 and also served on the country's Judicial Council. Tony Forson once lectured in press law at the former Ghana Institute of Journalism. The three nominees are expected to appear before Parliament's Appointment Committee for vetting, after which the committee will submit its recommendations to the House for approval.
Well, let's get on the phone lines and speak to private legal practitioner and MP for Mesha South constituency, Naneje Bafwe. While we're grateful for your time on the Midday News, first, do you find adequate justification for the expansion of the Apex Court?
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Yes. Go ahead.
I congratulate the three nominees. I know them very well from practice. I know Justice Benasco from her time at the High Court. She joined from private bar. That is where she used to be the director of legal from TOR, or one of those state oil agencies. And subsequently, following her appointment, she was also elevated to the Court of Appeal. If you would recall, Justice Benasco was one of the justices that were elevated to the Supreme Court before the Nana Dankwa Akufo-Addo, Dr. Bawumia administration came to an end on the 7th of January, 2025. And so she had previously been nominated and vetted by the previous or by the 8th parliament. And so it doesn't come to me as a surprise that he has been renominated by this government. Justice Amoakum Asante used to practice from the Fast Track High Court, the then Fast Track High Court, used to sit at the then Fast Track High Court. And subsequently, he was also transferred from Accra, and later he was elevated to the Court of Appeal and then was sent to the ECOWAS Court. So he also comes with a depth of experience, both local and international. Mr. Tony Forson,
right,
himself a former president of the Bar Association. His father was previously an attorney general under the SWAPNDC government.
Will this addition mean faster cases for Ghanaians, or is really backing up the numbers?
Well, the Supreme Court, because of the many jurisdictions it has beyond the constitution, exclusive jurisdiction to interpret the constitution, also is the final court of appeal and has complained about being overhauled. As a result. And so that is that, if you recall, one of the basis for which Justice Tokono was removed, I do apologize. I think that was my nose imitating me. One of the basis for which Justice Tokono was removed was her recommendation to have the court enlarged, and subsequently recommending for certain judges to be appointed.
All right. And so that's Nane J. Bafwe, where we're still trying to establish a clearer line to him so that we can hear him properly. And he's been commenting on the new appointment to the Supreme Court. Now, the political fight over the Regional Tribunals Bill is escalating less than 24 hours after its passage. The minority insists the new tribunal system is unnecessary and risks creating a parallel court structure open to political abuse. They vow to repeal it if the NPP returns to power. The bill, which restores regional tribunals as part of Ghana's justice system, was passed despite a minority walkout before the vote. Speaking on Joy News' Super Morning Show, Minority Leader Alexander Afenyomark argued that Ghana's existing courts can handle corruption and criminal cases if resourced properly.
Oh, not just winning majority in parliament, but winning the presidency. You need executive powers to support your legislative powers in parliament to effect major reforms, transformations, and changes. The MPP's position is very clear. We don't need these regional tribunals. What we need to do is to strengthen our court system, invest in retooling, train our judges, and get those with the necessary integrity to man our courts and dispense justice without fear or favor and respect the law. Basically, that's the position of the MPP. So obviously, anything that would disturb the existing judicial infrastructure would have to go.
Well, Mr. Afenyomarkin has also accused the Mahama administration of applying double standards, citing recent Supreme Court nominations. He argues that the NDC criticized similar appointments under the Akufo-Addo administration as attempts to pack the courts, but is now pursuing policies it opposed while in opposition.
Unfortunately, as fate would want it, time has exposed them. They are double standard, they are hypocrisy, and they are unprincipled posture. Is it now okay to nominate more judges to the Supreme Court? I'm not here to talk about the qualification of these individuals and all. I am attacking the political decision. If NDC says certain things in opposition and cannot stick to what they said now in government, then Ghanaians should not take them serious. You say you are against the packing of the court, that if a government appoints judges to the Supreme Court. It amounts to parking the court. But today, you got the opportunity and you are even doing worse. So where is the principle?
Well, the reintroduction of regional tribunals has already generated strong reactions in Parliament. My colleague James Avegi is in Parliament, joins us on the phone line. So, James, what has the majority been saying? James, kindly reposition yourself and so we can hear you properly. The lines seems to be bad this morning. Unfortunately, James Avegi's line is terrible on there. We'll try and get him back on that. But earlier on, he captured proceedings in Parliament.
Guidance throughout the passage of this bill. I believe that all the concerns that civil society groups had have been adequately dealt with. And I urge civil society groups to take a look at the bill and the various provisions of the bill. And if there are concerns, I believe that this House is a listening House and we can revisit some of the issues that they are concerned about. But for now, we believe that we have provided Ghana with the best framework for a tribunal system of administrative justice as one can possibly have.
Amid growing questions over whether government's flagship 24-hour economy program is more than just a promise, the Secretariat says implementation is already underway with 268 filling stations, 33 manufacturing companies and 3 state institutions now operating round the clock. Thus, the response follows claims by the ranking member on Parliament's Economy and Development Committee, Kojo Opon-Krumah, who questioned what the program had delivered and suggested there was little to show for it. Listen to him on the floor of Parliament a few days ago.
The promise of the 24-hour economy was clear. 1-3-3. One job, 3 people, 3 shifts. Mr. Speaker, this government is almost 2 years in office. And in these 2 years, they have appropriated about 650 billion Ghana cedis. That's what this House has appropriated for government to work with. Almost 2 years on, you cannot find one government agency that is applying 1-3-3. For all the stories that we were told, for all the analogies that were given, 2 years on, after appropriating about 650 billion Ghana cedis, you cannot find one agency that is operating 1-3-3.
Well, the Secretariat is rejecting the claims, insisting the program is driven largely by private investment rather than government spending. It says 12 oil marketing companies are providing 24-hour services through 268 filling stations nationwide, while the Driver and Vehicle Licensing Authority, Ghana Publishing Company and Ghana Ports and Harbours Authority have also introduced 24-hour operations. Well, my colleague Gemma Pia joins me in studio with details of that statement. Gemma, what more does it say?
So the Secretariat issued the statement to respond to comments by the MP of Ofoasi Ayoribi MP Kojo Opon-Krumah questioning what the program has delivered since its launch. The Secretariat argues that the criticisms are based on misunderstanding of the program's funding and implementation model. It goes on to say that the 650 billion cedis appropriated by Parliament over the past 2 years, which Kojo Opon-Krumah referred to, is not a funding for the 24-hour economy. Mm-hmm. Instead, the program is designed to be driven largely by private sector investment and governments providing project preparation, viability gap funding where necessary, and seed funding for the Secretariat. The program, they say, should be just by the amount of investment mobilized, jobs created, production and exports, not by direct government spending. So the long-term goal is to reduce unemployment to below 5% and by 2034 from 14.7% in September 2024. And the Secretariat goes on to say that it has signed joint development agreements worth about $5.5 billion within a broader $11.5 billion project pipeline targeting 1.7 million jobs by the end of 2028. It cites projects including the Wepe Solar and Battery Project, Oil Palm Complex, and a bioenergy program as evidence of the progress. And they say that the incentive package for the private sector has been designed and is being finalized with the Ministry of Finance before its public announcement. Mami, you earlier talked about the program being in operation, some 268 filling stations and others.
All right. Thank you, Gemma. Well, teacher unions have welcomed government's decision to recruit about 16,000 trained teachers, describing the move as a significant intervention to boost staffing levels in schools across the country. The unions, however, say the figure falls short of what is needed to address the growing backlog of unemployed trained teachers. We'll hear shortly from the president of the National Association of Graduate Teachers, NAT, but first, listen to President Mahama's announcement of the approval during his resetting Ghana tour in the Volta region.
And so we've given clearance for the Ministry of Education to start employing at least 16,000 new teachers. We want to clear the backlog so that when you finish and come, you will not have to mark time before we find jobs for you.
Well, now, President of NAGRA, Jacob Anaba, who says the number cleared for recruitment remains inadequate, with more than 40,000 trained teachers still awaiting employment.
We are happy to note that the president has heard us loud and clear that we need to increase the numbers. But, of course, it falls below our expectation. As we speak, we have more than 40,000 teachers still at home, and they need to be recruited. It's not because we just want teachers to be in the classroom, but because we have shortfall in the numbers in the classroom, especially deprived areas in this country. So it's a welcoming news, but our expectation is that we should do more than 30,000 this year or next year.
Well, Mr. Anaba says while the union appreciates the recruitment, it wants government to prioritize education by ensuring newly trained teachers are employed without delays and by approving additional recruitment in the coming years.
In fact, what we demand is that immediately we train a teacher, we should get him or her a classroom to teach. We cannot spend so much of our taxes to train people and leave them at home, and they are not contributing productively. So we wish that immediately they come out of school, they are recruited.
Well, let's go on Zoom now. Speak to Executive Director of Africa Education Watch, Kofi Asare. Grateful for your time, Kofi. How significant is this intervention in addressing Ghana's teacher unemployment situation? So unfortunately, we can't hear Kofi properly, and it's bad. The phone lines are bad today. Grateful for your time, Kofi. We'll try and fix that problem. And you're still listening to the Midday News here on Joy 99.7 FM. I am Mrs. Nyamiche Thompson. Well, we'll take a break when we return. South Africa is sending envoys to Ghana to address concerns over xenophobic attacks against Ghanaian migrants.
Work with us, and I'm rather pleased that President Mahama of Ghana has been saying he would like to make a call on other African countries to work with South Africa. It's precisely what has triggered our
Kumasi Metropolitan Assembly, KMA, has resumed its demolition and decongestion exercise at the SFO interchange, the area behind Cocoa Board and within the Takoradi Flour Mill enclave, as part of efforts to reclaim public spaces and enforce city bylaws. The renewed operation follows a violent confrontation a week ago when KMA city guards and other security personnel were attacked by occupants during a routine inspection and enforcement exercise. Chinese checks reveal that over 100 structures are being dismantled. Listen to Kumasi Mayor Richard Ofori Ajimanbwedi.
So this place belongs to the Ghana Railway Authority. And so we have arranged for us to have a meeting with our top management members in Accra next week. We'll meet them. We'll let them come to appreciate the requirements of our city as regards the erection of structures and buildings, and then let them know what to do in order not for these kinds of things to spring up again and for it to reoccur. When we are done with that meeting, whatever the outcome is, we'll do a brief and submit to the Minister for Local Government, the Minister for Transport, where the railway agency falls under, and then the Minister for Lands. I say the Minister of Lands because I've seen leases emanating from railway on some permanent structures here. I am not sure and certain if it falls within the mandate of the railway authority, what is supposed to be under the Ministry of Transport to be giving out land leases in Kumasi in particular.
Still in the Ashanti region, the Ashanti Kenny Otunfo Osei-Tutu II has called for the speedy settlement of chieftaincy disputes, warning that delays in resolving such cases continue to threaten peace and development in many traditional areas. He made the call at the Supreme Court's 150th anniversary lecture held at the Mensho Palace.
In this role, the Supreme Court has acted not as a rival to Nananum, but at its best as a steadying institutional partner, a forum of last resort where the ancient wisdom of custom is tested against and reconciled with the values of our written constitution and other laws, including due process, non-discrimination, and the rule of law. Custom is unclear, contested, or has evolved with a community that lives by it, the court has increasingly recognized its own institutional humility, deferring to those who lived and inherited knowledge of the custom in question, while standing ready to intervene where fundamental rights are generally at stake.
So,
we must be candid, though, about the strains in this relationship. Delays in resolving chieftaincy disputes, some spanning generations, have at times undermined public confidence and left communities without settled leadership for unconscionably long periods.
You heard there Asante Henning Otunfo Osei-Tutu II. Now, South Africa is sending envoys to Ghana to address concerns over xenophobic attacks targeting Ghanaian migrants in that country. In a video circulating on X, President Cyril Ramaphosa is heard calling for an amicable solution, saying stronger cooperation and knowledge sharing between both countries will deepen ties. Listen.
In the past, we've always sought for others to understand. This time around, we'll be saying we want to work together. Work with us, and I'm rather pleased that President Mahama of Ghana has been saying he would like to make a call on other African countries to work with South Africa. And that is precisely what has triggered our intention to send envoys so that they can go and explain the type of initiatives, type of programs that we are going to embark upon. Because in the end, this is an African problem. It's not only a South African problem. We are all involved in this. It's various countries on the continent that experience precisely what we are going through.